Mr. Doherty, Reel 2. Could you say something more about your sickness?
Yes. Those that were sick and they couldn't work were taken back to Singapore, to Changi, from River Valley. And they threatened to put us into Selarang Square if those in Selarang Square didn't sign the document that they were supposed to sign, that the Japs were trying to get them to sign. Anyway, they moved us into Selarang, and then almost immediately they pulled us out again because the whole lot was over. I think the officers advised the men to sign it, but as it was enforced, the promise it didn't count legally. Something like that. And so the Japs said, as a reward, they take the sick and they put them on a hospital boat. Well, we was all amazed at this. Thought, oh God, it's too good to be true. Anyway, I was amongst this 600, and we lined up there on Selarang's on Changi Square. And to our surprise, the lorries came up, and they crammed us all on these lorries. You'd never credit. I don't know how many was on. You know, ordinary 5-ton lorries they were, but we crammed on, hanging on to each other so we wouldn't fall off the side, all standing up. And they took us down to the docks, and there was a little boat called
Matsimari,
I think it was called. It was 6,800 tons and it was built in Glasgow. Uh, 400 of us was put in the forehold, 200 was put in the rear hold. We was head to foot. Above us, the Japs had constructed tiers and tiers of bunks, places for their horses. They had 3,000 Japs and 600 prisoners, and I don't know how many horses they had on that one ship. That was our hospital ship. So we started to sail from Singapore. They opened the hatches and let the sun come in, and the sun formed a square of light that went round, and as the sun went down, so it was dark again. So that thread of light was our contact with the outer world. But then a sergeant major, like they lowered, they lowered some grub down on pails. Well, if you call it grub, it was a load of greyish water with a bit of fat on top floating around. And that was our food. At first I thought, well, could we can't eat this stuff. But we did. We ate it. And then the Sergeant Major, I can't remember his name, I think his name was Sergeant Major Bullock, said he was ill and the Japs didn't come down. And then somebody said diphtheria. So suddenly there was four blokes that said they were doctors, they were Japs, came down the stairs with their masks on. And they took Sergeant Major Bullock up on deck. And then we heard a scream, and then the four doctors came down again and made this announcement. I'm sorry, but your Sergeant Major has passed away. And they all went upstairs again.
What did you conclude from that?
Well, I think we all concluded the same thing. He went straight over the side. That was the first one, you see. There's no more on the voyage. We ended up in Surabaya. I thought about diving over the side there, but I looked into that water and see all those bloody fish, and I thought, I don't know, sharks in there. If I'd gone over, what could I do? No, it's no good. We was prisoner and that was it. I couldn't get away from there. And we got to Maniwaki and the Celebes. That's the northern part northern part of New Guinea, I'd say that was. Oh, very pretty place, a lovely little tiny tin church, great mountains in the background, beautiful sea. Still, you don't want to know all about that. Then we nosed our way carefully, as though we were trying to avoid something, round the islands, until finally we saw this big volcano. We stopped and came out on deck. There was this big volcano there, where it turned out to be Rabaul. We came right up alongside. There's no jetties or anything like that. Right up alongside the land, and the Japs told us to get off. Well, we got off and we were standing up, yet the boat was at our sides. They dumped these sacks of salt on our shoulders, and we had to carry the salt through the beach. Well, not forgetting that we were sick men, that salt weighed a lot of, very heavy indeed. And if you fell with it, then of course the salt became heavier still. And somehow or other we managed to get the salt off and get on the beach. Well, it was raining like cats and dogs, it was. It was really pelting down. We didn't know where we were. And we laid down there, just in the open. And one chap came up to me, and he put his cape over my body and left me. I think that was, I can never, it's a thing I can't understand. He came back next morning for his cape. He took his cape and gave me a boot with his foot as well. I don't know what that was for, but it's just a part of the extraordinary behaviour of them. They can be good, they can be bad. It's something we've got yet to understand, because they're a different race to us, they've got a different point of view, they've got different ideas, and what seems bad to us seems good to them. I mean, they think us surrendering, we were worse than cowards. They couldn't understand that we've been told to surrender. So
do I understand that when you arrived at Rabaul and had finished this unloading of the salt, that you just had to sleep in the open with no shelter?
That was that night. Yeah, we didn't have any shelter or anything. Then they moved us. We had to march, you see, from there. That was the first night back off the ship. We was laying on the beach in the rain, etc., you see. Then the next morning, they marched us off to Kokopo. As they spell that, C-O-C-O-P-O. Where we was all put in tents, our own tents. Quite good they were as well, but we crowded out. We didn't do any work or anything there. I don't think the chap knew what to do with us for a bit. We didn't have much grub, very little. And there was the usual, anybody that wasn't behaving themselves was given a 48-hour stand or a more severe punishment. I had a 24-hour stand. I don't think much of it either. What your 24-hour stand is, you go up and you've got to stand in front of the guard, you see. And if it's a minor offence, you just stand there for the whole 24 hours. If there's an offence that's a little bit more so you've been saucy or something like that, they'd make you stand with one hand up for 2 hours, up in the air. And then when the next jack come on, you've got to put that arm down and the other arm up for 2 hours, for 24 hours, you see. That's called the long stand. When you lower your hand, it's like all pins and needles. It's the pain there, you see. And you're glad when you put it down. You're frightened to put it down. You've got to put the other one up. If you took your hand down, let your hand drop, the Jap would hit you with his rifle. See, this young Willie West, they knocked his eye out. Well, he didn't knock his eye out. They gave him a clout alongside the head. And then the Japanese soldiers, says that the Japanese surgeons, as they said they were, says they're going to put his eye out, eye right. So they took his eye out, disc by disc. The man was conscious. He screamed his head off, and that man died with sheer pain. Now, I can't understand what they got out of putting that man through that torture, which I can only see. They had that side to them as well.
What do you mean by disc by disc?
Disc by disc. They had these little tiny bent sort of spades, and they lifted it out bit by bit, disc by disc, till there was a hole there, and the bloke was screaming his head off. Right out in the open, and all these people were around, having a look at it, see what was going on.
Had he had his eye injured by being hit by the...
No, he was hit across the head with a lump of 4x2, not 4x2, 2x2 angle iron. And he went down, and he was holding his head like that. He was bleeding. So they put him on the table, the Japs put him on the table, and tied him down, and... Then they started to do this operation on his eye. But the bloke screamed, and he kept screaming till he died. That was a bad part of it, that one. I don't like that at all.
Did you... Where did you get your own punishment, this 24-hour stand?
I had an old pipe. And I was putting bits of banana leaf and tapioca leaf in smoking this pipe. Jack gave me an order and I had this pipe in my hand, so he knocked the pipe out of my hand onto the ground. And I dived to pick it up, and the Jap shouted at me, and he snatched it from me and put my pipe in the fire. And then I was taken up to the top of the hill for a long stand. I didn't do anything. Well, I didn't think I'd done anything wrong, but they seemed to think I'd done something wrong. But they burnt me pipe and they put me up on top of the hill. Another one I did worse than that later on, but still.
Tell me about the other one.
Tell you about the other one. Well, it's when I was in solitary. A Jap kicked me on an ulcer. His name was Nomra. And he was a second-class soldier. And when he kicked me on the ulcer, the pain was so great that I flew at him with all these other Japs around, and he fell down this mountainside, rushed back and fell down the mountainside. It was a sloping mountain, not a cliff or anything like that. And all the other Japs was there, and they all started laughing their head off. And I thought, well, now I'm going to be shot for this. So I picked up one of the rods that we carry water with, and when Nomra came back up the path again, and gradually coming into the cookhouse where we were, I offered him the stick so that he could beat me up. Well, he ran away, and the other Japs laughed, and they thought, well, to themselves, I suppose, I don't know. But they didn't report me, so therefore I wasn't punished for that.
So he thought you were going to hit him with a stick, presumably.
Well, apparently, the Jap shouted, he's giving you the stick to hit him back. It seemed as that was what they were saying. So, anyway, the Jap, Nomra, running away, seemed to, all the other soldiers kept quiet. And so I went back to my thing, but we'll come to that later on. Where was we? I jumped a few
places. You're describing your second punishment. So did you get away with it?
The second one, yes, I got away with that. I was working on the digging the tunnels then, you see, but I've jumped a bit. You see, that's where it is.
Right.
I haven't come to that, but they just want me to go to that.
Well, you'd left off by talking about your arrival at
Kokopo, yeah.
Camp, and you'd said that they didn't seem to have any work for you to do. That was where you left
that's
off.
That's right, yes, that's right. Well, at that time, was the Americans... we'd buried quite a lot of people. I'd admitted to say that we was burying people at this time, quite regular, every morning. And
what were they dying of?
Well, dying of dysentery, malaria, insane. Beriberi, tropical ulcers. Some dying just because they wanted to die, I think. Anyway, Eric Dance, he wanted us to tell his mother and father that he died like a gentleman, which all of all act really, because he was the son of Lord and Lady Dance. Eric Dance, his name was Captain Eric Dance, and we had some people there in amongst our mob that got a gold cigarette case from Eric Dance to go and trade with the Japs. If they got through the wire, to trade with the Japs, the other Japs, that is, not our guards, for a big box of meat to bring back. And Eric Dance was supposed to have shared it, and they were going to share him with the doodah. This was a solid gold cigarette case. Anyway, the first in the meat killed Eric. He just, that was too much for him. Another bloke got a bucket of potatoes, sweet potatoes. He was so greedy, he cooked all these potatoes away from everybody else and ate them till he killed himself. Another bloke found some malaria tablets, what do you call quinine tablets, a bottle of quinine tablets, and ate a lot himself and killed himself. Is it the sort of thing? I suppose it's self-survival or something, but these sort of things did happen. I've gone off rambling off now, and I don't know where I am.
Well, what can you tell me what happened after you arrived at Coco Po Camp? Because you said that at first they didn't seem to have any work for you to do.
No, that was what I was saying. Now, they didn't have any work for us to do, or didn't seem to have any work for us to do. And what the hell happened then? They split us up. They said, some of you are going on a mission. They're going to take them out to work or something. And so they split the camp up, and these 200, 250, this crowd of men anyway, was taken away, and they were supposed to be going on a working party. I think they went on a ship. I don't know. But from that day, we didn't see any of them again. None at all. Not anything. So they disappeared. They tell us they were put on a ship and they got sunk. But really, we don't know what happened to them. That's the truth. I mean, it's all right to say, oh, they went on a ship and they were bombed by American bombers and they went down the bomb. That's all supposition. We don't know. We can only assume. They went out of our lives completely. Now, you say, what was we doing? Well, we found ourselves so busy digging trenches to bury everybody that there wasn't any time to do anything. Nothing at all. So we got down in number to about 78. And we put on a boat and taken across to an island called Watum. W-A-T-U-N. It was a nice little island. And the Kanakas there seemed very friendly. They didn't even know war was on, I don't think. And there we was put to work again. Then,
what type of work was this on Watum?
Watum? Well, the work we got was started up another way. Like, when we first got there, we'd be going to be assigned work. And then they got us moving these coconut trees that they cut, lifting them across. And then it was a time, and I'd done something wrong, but I can't remember what the hell I'd done wrong. I was having a scrap with Buglis or something, I think it was. Buglis was another bloke. And I was having a fight with him over some silly matter, I don't know. We was too weak to scrap, but we was hitting each other and our fists weren't hurting and we had no power behind our punches. But for some silly thing we was fighting, and I don't know what it was. Anyway, the Japs caught us. And they said, well, he'll be this bloke here. Well, I don't know, they never said that because I didn't understand what he was talking about. But I was selected out and I was kept there. And all the rest were taken away. Now, whether this was for an experiment or what it was, I don't know. But I found myself by myself. I was isolated. I was put down to the kitchen to carry water to start with. And the previous argument broke out, as I told you about just now. And they took me back to camp. And then they went, took me to the side of a mountain. And they drew this big archway across the rock to make a mark in the side of the rock. And they gave me a pick, and said, dig. And so I had to swing this pick and start digging into the side of this mountain. I didn't know what for. And to push the soil behind me down the mountainside. Then two Japs came with me, because they said it was going to be fair, and they gave me a rest. One Jap would have a go at digging, then he'd give the pick to me, and in case I keep saying Terabashi, Terabashi means pick. Gave the pick to me. And then when I had my go, the other Jap had a go. Then it was my turn again. So as you can see, it was one Jap, me. And so eventually, we started getting into the mountains. And as we got into the mountain, it started getting darker. It's very hard, this rock. And as they're pushing it out, it's making a platform. And so they decided they'd have to have lamps. So I was to make coconut oil. So I went. Had to go out, collect the coconuts, cut a niche in a tree, another branch into that, grate all the coconuts. You know, by grating the coconuts, you cut a bit of tin round with sharp teeth, nail it on a stick, sit on it, and then halve the coconut and break, turn it round, and the pail fills up with coconut copper. You see. Well, then you put it into a sack. And as I say, you cut a niche in the tree and you put another pole on it and you put the sack underneath the pole and underneath the pole that's coming out. And you put as many rocks as you can on the end of the pole, and yourself, and you squeeze on that till it all goes down into a drum underneath. Well, this forms a lot of coconut milk and the cream comes to the top. When the cream comes to the top, you scoop it off. The cream you scoop off. When you boil it, it comes clear and it is pure coconut oil. But I discovered something then by dropping a very old spoon that I had into the acid. And this is one of my first medical discoveries. I was ridden with an ulcer in my leg that was digging deeper and deeper into it. And I found when I took a spoon out of this acid, it was clean. So I plunged my leg into the acid, and by God, it didn't half hurt. And I pulled it out again, and I put banana skin round it, and wrapped it with coconut oil, and wrapped it as a poultice. And my ulcer cleared over. Of course, there's still there now, some of them. Your ulcer's all over here, see? My ulcer's cleared up. Then I had to fight malaria, which I was absolutely, it was mosquitoes all over me. And I found that as I took a bit of mango bark and chewed that, it tasted somewhat like quinine. And I chewed that, and for some unknown reason, I found that after 10 days, the malaria would come back again. So I boiled up papaya leaves, because I couldn't think of anything worse than that.
What do you mean worse than that?
Worse tasting than that. And I ate these papaya leaves. They was terrible. I ate them for 10 days and I found that I wouldn't get malaria. So I took mango again and then papaya leaf. So I took 10 days of mango bark, 10 days of papaya leaf boiled. And I found I cured that. Then I found that there's a yellow flower in the jungle. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of it. But I found that little yellow bush with the leaves crumpled into the hand with the green stain that it left on you cured tinea. In fact, just for medical records, at a later date on the 2nd 7th ADH New Guinea, I cured an Australian soldier of that, which was incurable by medical science, in 2 weeks, whereas the doctors couldn't cure the others with their medicines. So that plant, the yellow plant with the green leaf, the leaf about 1.5 inches long, that grows in the jungle quite profusely, is a good antidote against tinea.
What is
tinea? Calamine. Tinea is the little pimples you get in between the fingers and under the scrotum and all that sort of business. Quite a disease that most white men get when they go abroad. Anyway, that is a point. Somebody might make use of that. I don't know. Put some use to this record. Now, where was I, sir?
You were talking about this punishment of digging into this hillside.
That was work. It wasn't punishment. It was work. So that way. I got my coconut oil.
But were many POWs doing this work, or just you?
Me, only me. The others were somewhere else. I couldn't see them. I wasn't allowed to speak to a white man then.
So you were really doing this because they were punishing you?
I don't know whether it's punishment or what it was. For instance, the first thing they said to me was, the officer stood there and he said, "Here, catch the kudasai." And he waved his hand to us to go away. Well, I didn't know what it meant, so I started to walk away. And Kun hit me, knocked me back again. So the next time I stood there and I got another hit, so I thought, well, "Here, catch the kudasai" must mean come here. But it didn't. Koya koya meant come here. But so I came to the officer, and the officer started smiling. Then I noticed he had a cigarette in his hand. So I went and got the light, that which you get from a coconut. You set a coconut alight, and that remains alight all the time. Like if you get a bit of coconut string and rub it in your hands, you get a long string that's hessing out the coconut. And by lighting the end, it smoulders for a very long time, as long as you've got the string there. So I gave him a light, and I found that was the way to obey orders. Well, that's how I learnt to obey orders, when they spoke to me in Japanese. So a mixture with the way they said it and the times they said it, I got to know quite a bit of what they said. Now, in making this coconut oil, I had to collect the coconuts, as you know. Just to give you some idea of the little punishments they gave me, is I dropped these coconuts down onto the slope of the hill, and they bounced on the way down, and they collected at the bottom where I was knocking, where I was grating all the coconuts. Well, this one coconut went down the hill, and it bounced, and at the same time, one of the little chickens came out the side and ran underneath. And as the coconut went down, it hit this chicken, landed on top of this chicken. And the Japs went mad.
What, did it kill the chicken?
Well, the chicken wasn't dead then, but it was dying. And so they laid the chicken in front of my little hut, because they told me to build a hut to live in. In front of my little hut. And right in front of my little hut, I had to dig my grave. And then they put the shovel on the top of all the soil, or rather they made me put the shovel there. And I was confined to my hut. And then, when the chicken had died, they brought me out of the hut, and they formed a circle, and they all had coconuts with the fronds on the end, and they pushed me in the middle of the circle and said about me.
Well, these were coconut leaves, were they?
The coconut leaves with the coconut on the end, so they formed a club if you follow what I mean, the long fronds of the coconut with the coconut on the end. And they beat me till I was unconscious. I didn't know anymore. I woke up, I don't know if it was the middle of the night or very early morning, I don't know. But I had blood all over me.